Thank you, and welcome to the Lawrence Business Magazine, where we have in-depth conversations to follow up on articles and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. Today, I'm very pleased to have Andrea Hoody, the Assistant Athletic Director for Sports Performance and the Strength and Conditioning Coach for KU Men's Basketball, KU Women's Basketball, and you oversee the whole strength and conditioning facility there up at KU.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Well, we have... You were actually one of our women of impact, which with you actually has a couple of different meanings, since being the strength and conditioning coach. But one of the reasons you're different from a lot of several other people we had doing business is you make an impact in both a physical way, a huge impact on the athletes, and then also, you know, as a business magazine, one of the biggest things in this town is KU basketball. And obviously the impact you've made there has been incredible, which we have lots of quotes up from.
Well, I don't know how much of a business influence I have, but I do have a physical impact for sure.
Well, the physical impact leads to the success. And when the Jayhawks are winning, everybody's happy.
Yes, that's true.
So one of the things, but you have a wonderful history because you have been making an incredible impact in the strength and conditioning, and you... But I just want to talk a little about a history. I mean, people have read probably articles about you, but let's just talk a little bit about your personal history and how you kind of went from being one of five kids and fighting your way in races to kind of your evolution to becoming a strength and conditioning, how you got to that point.
I was the youngest of five kids. My mom and dad raised us Irish Catholic, so we never talked about anything. We fought about everything. So fighting has been ingrained ever since I was little. So my older brothers and sisters were athletes and mm-hmm. competitive. And, you know, we were an outdoor family. We rode bikes, we hiked, we ran. So everything that we did, I was always trying to play catch up. One of the rules when we went biking was mm-hmm. my mom said, first person who crashes, we're going home. So, you know, I would always be the first person to crash because I was always the one trying to catch up. And mm-hmm. then, you know, so I'd crash and then I'd be the reason why we'd be going home. And then I'd get hit because, so not only did I crash, probably suffer a concussion, I would get hit by my brothers and sisters because they were upset that I was the reason we were going home. So, everything was always trying to play catch up, and everything was competitive, and, you know, it's just been fighting and overcoming obstacles ever since I've known it. So, I don't know, I think I have a different outlook. I look at it as mm-hmm. every day, and I think people look at it as, people see me as not every day.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, one of the things, too, is, yeah, because if it's, and so when you're talking about obstacles, so becoming, you know, a female strength and conditioning coach when all you're surrounded by completely by males, to you that's just another obstacle?
Or what did you even see it as an obstacle? I just thought it was natural. I played pee wee football. I was always around. My dad was a wrestling coach. My brothers wrestled. Friends would come over, and I don't know. I think I related more competitively mm-hmm. To a male than a female.
And is that, do you think that men are more competitive then?
No, I just think it was more available.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Because your dad was a coach, so you're around the other athletes.
And there mm-hmm. there were more male sports at the time when I was growing up than, you know, the equality there is now with female sports.
Yeah, Title IX has been amazing for making women. Well, that's what I always amazed, because my sister was the first state champion in the mile in Kansas. And the reason she was the first, because they didn't allow women, girls, to run the mile.
Oh, it was the first year.
Exactly. So that's pretty cool. But it was the, you know, they don't allow you to do it. You can't show. And when I was, and also they didn't allow a woman to run the marathon mm-hmm. up until 1984.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, so it was probably more availability of mm-hmm. me participating in and competing against boys than it was girls.
Yeah, because you wanted to compete, and that was what was there.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I don't know if I wanted to compete necessarily.
But you had to.
Compete.
Well, Well, when you get with brothers and sisters, so you went for that with brothers and sisters, and I was reading one of these articles about competing, and that, you know, you said play Pee Wee football, and then your dad, when you went to junior high, your dad said you can't play football mm-hmm. anymore. You need to. So you switched into, you start put sports, and you do start playing.
I started playing basketball, junior okay. high basketball. That was the first. You know, I look at kids now, today, young athletes, and they're competing when they're 3, 5, yeah. competitive team sports. My first team sport wasn't until I was in 7th grade and I was 12 mm-hmm. years old for females.
Right.
But before that, I had to participate in male sports. So mm-hmm. that was when I was 10. It was football.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, so when you went, you went through then high school and stuff, then you went to the University of Maryland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there you played volleyball there, and you got a degree in kinesiology.
Yes.
So when did you start realizing that, you know, this was going to be kind of your career?
My brothers and sisters also participate in collegiate sports, mm-hmm. from swimming and diving to volleyball to wrestling to football, all in college. So they were always training. And my father had built a little training facility under our back patio and porch.
Oh, cool.
So there was a weightlifting set. And I remember, like, their teammates would come over. So there was actually like team workouts going on in our backyard. I tried to get a part of it as much as I could, but, you know, again, I'd always fail. Story of my life. You know, training was always there. I saw it all the time. And then I went to school. I wanted to study exercise and exercise science, and I thought I wanted to be a personal trainer because I thought I could make more money that way, mm-hmm. be more financially successful that way. And then while I was in college, I discovered corporate fitness, where I thought there was more money in it. And, you know, that was my fault for probably being motivated by money.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into corporate fitness, and I hated it because those people just signed up for it because of insurance reasons.
Yeah, that's what I was reading. I think that's so, so they didn't have any drive.
Not for exercise now. Maybe national security, because I was out of Virginia, Reston, Virginia. But so they would start to exercise and they'd start to sweat and they'd say, "Okay, I'm done." And I was like, "Wait a second, you know, we're just getting started." So that didn't last very long. And then I actually taught chemistry and coached volleyball at Bladensburg, Maryland.
Okay.
For like 3 months before mm-hmm. I got my GA ship with strength and conditioning at UConn.
Then that makes sense. So then you went from like, okay, I was using strength and conditioning because I wanted to make money and have a job, to now I actually want to do strength and conditioning because that's what I love.
Right. Yes. So yeah. I could do it for free.
Yes.
Don't tell Dr. Zinger that.
You could, but you do it for the love of it, but you need to make a living.
Right.
It is a business show, so we believe that people should get paid good salaries.
Thank you.
and your impact, so then you started kind of, sounds like that's where you kind of came into your own, where you really realized that this, you know, this was your, this is something you knew and can learn and do as well as anybody, start training people.
Mm-hmm. Because that's all I knew,
really.
That's all I saw. Mm-hmm. My parents were in education, so I'm always, you know, they were teachers. So in strength and conditioning, you don't get any wins and losses. So mm-hmm. I have to be a better teacher than a coach because, again, I don't get wins and losses. Coach Self does.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie does. So I have to be able to teach. And for me to teach movement efficiency, movement mechanics, and create a better machine,
mm-hmm.
then I'm doing my job. I was telling somebody the other day, I took one of those aptitude tests in junior high.
Oh, yeah?
And it came out that I was supposed to be a car mechanic.
Now, oh, wow.
I probably would have made a lot of money in my lifetime as a car mechanic, but I knew that that probably wasn't in mm-hmm. my future. Should have been, but it wasn't in my future. But then I look at back now, and I have my degree in sport biomechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So my brain works in a mechanical way to break down movement mm-hmm. and make it more efficient.
And I think, I wanted to definitely get more into that, because I think what you're also doing at the university too, with your training and the kind of the research aspects of everything that you guys do, I think it's really fascinating, the kind of the breakdown. And I wanted to get just a little bit about, so you were at Connecticut for quite a while.
9.5 years.
9.5 years. And do you have more rings than anybody else up at the field house? Because you've got 9 championship rings now, right?
Yeah, 9.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. It's great. It's something, you know, early in my career, I had to fight by competing with the athletes and showing them that I'm a good coach and earning respect. Now I just can point to the picture of the 9 rings and I've earned my keep. So it's evolved, certainly, my way of proving myself as a coach.
Well, proving yourself as a coach, and also just you have a little bit of, you have a shorthand now, right?
Yeah.
Just jump those steps and go straight to
point to the rings.
So this is interesting. So you, and I would definitely get it, but why, being at Connecticut, so you then came to KU, and there is that story, and Coach Self has said it, you know, woman coach, you know, I don't want, you know, I think it helps with, and he actually evolved too to realize, yeah, oh, women can do these things. So tell us a little bit about, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about how you went from Connecticut to KU and became here and started really changing this program.
Great.
1320 KLWN, radio you can depend on.
I'm here with Andrea Hoody, Assistant Athletic Director for Sports Performance and Strength and Conditioning Coach for KU. And one of the things, a couple of words we have, Coach Self described Andrea as relentless, but she gains respect. And then Jeff Withy had described her as this KU's secret weapon. And other words that have been used to describe you were aggressive, tough, ruthless, but mentally strong. So not too shabby. those are what Coach Self describes you now as, relentless, and also describes you as one of the best decisions he ever made. But let's talk a little about it, because initially it wasn't really a decision he wanted to make. So let's talk a little bit about how you got from Connecticut to Kansas.
Yeah, I had worked at Connecticut for 9.5 years for 2 Hall of Fame basketball coaches, Jim Calhoun and Gino Auriemma. And we had won 7 national championships. I had 5 with the women and 2 with the men. And Lou Perkins at the time had come out here, and Sean Lester. And they came out here a year before and then called me a year later when Roy took the sport performance Jonas to North Carolina, and there was an opening here. Mm-hmm. So they asked if I was interested, and I said, of course I am.
So you were interested, but Coach Self was
not.
and he gave it, he said a couple of things, like, you know, he just, you know, I, you know, he just never thought of having a woman, you know, strength and conditioning coach, you know, why would I want, you know, just didn't feel like you could meet.
Yeah, lifting weights isn't necessarily about brute strength. Mm-hmm. It's not about pushing the most amount of weight you can for us, for sport performance. Mm-hmm. Now you go to wherever other college and they might think that it is about pushing the most amount of weight you can. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not. And I've studied exercise. I've worked with the best researchers in the world. Andy Fry is here. He's one of the best resistance training researchers in the world, and we work together to discover best practices for our basketball team. And we actually have a really cool study that's one of our PhD students, Patricia Dietz, who's also an assistant strength coach. She's working on a study that we looked at 29 weeks of cortisol, which is a stress hormone.
Okay.
So every time the guys came in the weight room, we did a salivary test of cortisol. Mm-hmm. To measure cortisol levels. So we're going to look at cortisol levels, ground reaction forces from the force plate, power output in watts from our elite form, and then we're going to compare them to number of minutes played, travel schedule, classes, tests.
Wow.
Just injuries. We're going to look at all those things and put it together and formulate a pretty cool paper.
Wow, that's fascinating. So this, and then so this, as you're doing, then obviously this helps you inform how you're working with the different athletes.
Absolutely, yeah. It gives us a huge advantage.
Well, one of the huge advantages, too, I think, you know, just having one of the things Coach Self says is that he thinks that, you know, their players, you know, they're in better condition than anybody else when they get out there. They're in better condition, and he believes that because you're there, that you have less injuries because they're in better condition. And I think, that is incredible. So how, when you have these guys come in, you have, you know, I think you're talking, you know, from, you know, you have your skinny guys and your beefy guys, and you have all these different body types. How do you start the program, and how did you change this program when you came in? Because you really did change
the
way they do
stuff. We've evolved a lot with the technology that we have. Some guys might be leaner and have more reactive strength, be able to rely on their tendon use a little bit more, where Sharon Collins was a probably a less reactive guy and a strength guy. So he probably relied on his muscles a lot more. So you can look at it and see it after you explain it. Sharon then dealt with muscle cramping. So he relied on muscle strength a lot more than Tyshawn did, who was a reactive tendon guy. Mm-hmm. So you got to look at relative strength, reactive strength, absolute strength, all those different things. But now we've simplified it in a force plate. And we can look at, you know.
So what's the force plate? So,
well, the basic idea of movement is locomotion, how you run and how you jump. You look at our highlight film, you look at any dynamic play that anybody makes, and it's either they're running really fast or jumping really high. So our program is based on locomotion, how fast and how well do you move, how mechanically efficient you are, and we look at running economy. So we look at how you not only overcome gravity, but control or decelerate against gravity. So those force plate picks up. It's a Kistler force plate. It's from Switzerland. It's like a fine piece of machinery that has quartz crystals in it that picks up 1,000 hertz per second. So we can really look at
That's intense.
Newton's. Yeah, it is. We don't even squat test anymore. We don't clean test. We don't bench test. We just look at their force production and how they produce force into the ground. And what we want to do is eliminate imbalances between the ability to accelerate and decelerate. Then we can decrease injuries.
Okay, so that's pretty fascinating. So when you're training somebody and they have, they're more like you said with Sharon, you said he had muscle cramps and stuff like that. So how do you create a training regimen for him?
Well, Sharon probably not lift such heavy weight because he had a tendency to put muscle mass and weight on. So what we would do is lift sub max weights fast.
Okay.
So we would measure bar speed was more important for Sharon than it was for Tyshawn.
So that he would get kind of a quicker.
Yes.
So you'd help get his speed because he already had like the strength.
Right.
And he wanted to increase the other elements.
So you look at speed strength or strength speed. Is somebody stronger and they need to work on their speed, or is somebody faster and they need to work on their strength? So what we try to do is create the weakness that the athlete has and make it their strength.
Oh, cool. So that's just fascinating. So when you take, because when I, you know, when growing up, you know, the weight room, it was all just about how much can you leg press, how much can you bench press, you know.
And it's still some places it's still like that, which is fine. But
it's not the best way.
Well,
as far as you're concerned. So when you're doing when Coach Self was doing that, I have this was talking about. He said that you don't have as many injuries. Well, I was looking back at a thing, and they have Dan Orlovsky, who was played with Connecticut. He says that the players, they feared your punishment workouts, but they also prayed that they'd stay injury free because players who were unable to practice spent their afternoons with Hootie in the weight room.
Yeah.
So is the injury, are there injuries because they're just afraid of you, or
well, The last thing you want to do is spend time on the sideline an athlete. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we would make the players who were injured, mm-hmm. their workouts were a little bit harder to try to facilitate getting them back on the field.
That was facilitating a little encouragement there. So one of the things were... Coach Self also says he didn't know where you'd be without her. So how did you, when Coach Self met you, when you met him for the first time, mm-hmm. how did, I mean, he's always, you know, on when you hear him talking and stuff, he's a very congenial guy, but he also obviously is all business, so he wouldn't be kind of great coach he is.
Right.
So how, when you met him, how did you guys?
I guess took a my portfolio and my vision for the program and mm-hmm. presented it to him, and you know, I could say that he laughed at me, but it wasn't the first time that I've been laughed at, so I could laugh at myself. But I had dealt with that with mm-hmm. Coach Calhoun, Randy Etzel, who was the football coach at the time at UConn, actually, you know, embraced me when I was. Able to work with football. So, you know, it wasn't the first time that I'm going to mm-hmm. stand in front of somebody and them tell me that I can't do the job, because I've dealt with Division I football players, 100 of them staring at me at the same time. It's nothing new. So I knew I could do the job, but he didn't know that.
Right.
So,
but he obviously, You convinced him to. I also thought it was interesting. You said that you knew you could do the job, so give you a year, and if he didn't want you to stay around, then
yeah, I'd go find someplace else.
Well, sounds like he was one of the best decisions he ever made. So what is it like working? Because you have coached the guys' team, and then you also work with Bonnie's team, with the women's team, mm-hmm. and they are an amazing team to watch too. I know they don't get the attendance, but they are incredible athletes. Mm-hmm. So how do you work with them differently? I mean, because physically there's some differences, but then how do you work with them? Set up their programs.
I would say we do a little bit more conditioning with the women, because women tend to have a smaller cardiovascular tank, mm-hmm. let's say.
Okay.
So we always have to condition them where we don't necessarily have to condition the guys as much. We do the same exercise and we do the same tests. We look at force plate mm-hmm. profiles. And I think the exercises are the same. The exercise prescriptions are the same. But how we approach the females a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
The women are usually responsible to a group. You know, they care about what their teammates think, where I don't necessarily think that's the same with men. They're responsible for themselves and the mm-hmm. individual. But what's for good for the team.
Right.
Where the women, you know, somebody said, and I actually agree with it, is a woman... performs well when she feels well or good about herself, mm-hmm. where a guy feels good about himself if he performs well. So it's pretty cool.
So it's really more how you deal with the athletes, more in kind of their mental prescription and how you're talking to them and how you kind of work with them that way and motivate them as opposed
right.
to actually what their physical limitations are.
We don't allow any kind of physical limitation mm-hmm. unless somebody's hurt.
Yeah.
We approach the mm-hmm. coaching slightly different. Would I like them to be the same? Absolutely.
Make it easier, right?
Absolutely. It would make it a lot easier, but it's not
yeah.
the same.
Now, has it changed? Because you've been doing coaching women's sports now, because when you started, you said there wasn't as many options. Now that women have a lot more options, as women's sports, have the women changed how they, have they become much more, have they changed how they approach sports as well? Because they have more opportunity?
I think so, in a negative way.
Oh, yeah?
Because you look at the competitive options, and so these both men and women, mm-hmm. They start competing when they're 5 years old, and they don't really look at skill development and long-term development.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, they just look to pick up these skills by playing, and you're not going to get that. So to master something, you need to rep it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think kids are getting as many technical reps in terms of basketball, or whatever sport, you know, and anybody can argue that. But so then by the time they get to us, competition isn't that special, because maybe they're playing AAU basketball and they have five games in a day.
That's a lot.
You know?
Yeah.
When they're 10, 12, 13, 14 years old. I didn't have that. I didn't have the opportunity. We had a two-month season in junior high, and we played maybe twice a week. You know, so I think competition is really important, and especially when they walk in the field house.
Yeah.
We have to win. But I think it gets harder and harder the more and more they compete to realize how special it is.
That makes sense, because we know that whenever I've heard both Dr. Zanger and Coach Self speaking to groups of people who are parents in this town, it's always about let your kids play and play a lot of sports and do a lot of stuff and love the game, not just not get this kind of crazy
parenting. Well, there's a difference between playing and competing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think...
And some kids aren't mature enough to compete when they're 5 years old. You know? You're asking them to do something that they're incapable of.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when we come... we'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your kind of your whole method when you talk about the kind of the ground up, how when your Catholic comes in, kind of your whole philosophy and talking about authenticity and some of the key words you use when you're talking about working with these athletes.
Great.
I am here with Andrea Hoody, the Assistant Athletic Director for Sports Performance and the Strength and Conditioning Coach for the KU men's and women's basketball teams. And I just want to let our listeners know that the Lawrence Business Magazine is published quarterly and available at our local Hy-Vees, the Merck, and other convenient merchants around town. And you can also pick up a copy of the Lawrence Business Magazine and a couple of our new outdoor boxes downtown. It is also available online at thelawrencebusinessmagazine.com. And you can submit questions and comments for our guests on the line, as well as like us on Facebook, where you can find out updates and information on the radio show and magazine. We'd love to get your comments and questions, but in our effort to encourage open dialogue, we ask that you put your name on it. And so what I was saying is we also are here. So Andrea is also the National Collegiate Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great stuff. That's an honor.
That's great. So getting that honor, I mean, one of the reasons they said this, I mean, being that the coach of the year nationally, I mean, there's so many, there's a lot, every NCAA team has a strength and conditioning coach, I would think. So being named the National Coach of the Year, I was looking at just how you've influenced the sport, how you've, you know, worked with all these athletes, the science of it. So let's talk a little bit about your approach. I mean, we've talked about the plate. The force plate. Yes, the force plate, which is pretty cool. But how? But it's not just, you know, science. It's also a philosophy. So, what is your philosophy? How do you? What is your philosophy for all these different athletes you're dealing with?
One would be from the ground up. Mm-hmm. We look at movement and locomotion and jumping from the ground up. So, you know, if you can imagine trying to play basketball with a broken toe or a broken leg, it's not going to happen. I always make a reference to playing a sport or running as fast as you can on ice and then stopping and shuffling to your right or left. If you can't produce ground reaction forces with the ability to decelerate and accelerate, so a lot of people always forget deceleration mechanics and how important they are.
Yeah,
so it's like having a Ferrari without any brakes. It's not going to get you anywhere. No. I mean, it'll get you somewhere, right?
They'll just pass your destination or crash into it.
Yeah. So from the ground up, and then so we got to look at the base of our support, running and jumping, and creating a better athlete that way. But we also look at a more mechanically efficient athlete. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be the strongest athlete, but sure, you've gone into your local establishment and picked up a mug and you thought it was glass, and it turns out to be plastic. It moves a lot faster and it's a lot easier. So your brain told you you had to pick up X amount of weight, where you actually pick up something lighter and it moves a lot faster and it's a lot easier. So what we do in the weight room is we load these movements of triple extension, such as the things that you find in running and jumping, whether it's one leg or two. We load those, and then on the court they're unloaded, so they're a lot easier and they're a lot faster.
Okay. Well, now when you're working with them, so when you're talking about the ground up, so you're doing, because you always talk about legs, you always think of legs and stuff, but how the upper body strength is really important too.
Yeah, when we look at core stability or the ability to brace impact, I have a personal story from the other day, and we look at core. So the ability to stabilize your spine. I was on a bike. And I got hit from a car. So it hit my lower leg and it hit my shoulder. But what suffered was my back. So my back, my hip, my midsection didn't get hit at all. But I didn't have the ability to embrace or brace the impact of the car. So it threw my back out. So you got to look at the stability part of the connection between the upper body and lower body. And, you know, that would be the core stability, which the force plate also measures, too. And then women tend to have less muscle mass upper body, so then they suffer from a lack of core strength, more so than men. But men do, too. But we try to increase muscle mass in the upper body in women a little bit also.
So build that core strength so that you just – now, when you do that, someone says that when you have a shock or something by then it kind of – then your whole body can take it as opposed to just one area getting your weakest point taking
right.
it. Right.
Right? Yeah.
So now, you're talking about these things. So what I know that you do a lot of other things because your job with the KU track program is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job, especially when the students are here. But this summer, though, I know that you've done some other things and you're doing – you worked with Wounded Warriors. You talked to them. So tell me, what was that like? Because that's kind of a different...
That was kind of a project with our HSES department and Phil Vardaman, who is trying to create a relationship with the Marines at Fort Leonard Wood with our MMA program. But that led to then myself and a group of other people going down to Fort Leonard Wood, and I spoke to the leadership group of Marines on leadership, and then I spoke to probably 150 other female Marines and talked to them about leadership also.
That's pretty fascinating. So when you're talking about that, this is something too, is like we that you as you're getting these things together, because you are such a leader and kind of at the forefront of this, to get your message out, because I think, you know, this is something like with would you have any other projects of how to get this out of me, like writing a book?
I am in the process of trying to, I guess, put one together. So I'm being a book mechanic.
All right.
In that sense. And
that's
that, that would be, there's some leadership skills, some life lessons, and sport performance.
Well, one of the things, too, and in a book, I think, especially, because I think leadership skills... both, you know, both how you've succeeded in both, you know, in such a male-dominated area, but for both women and men, you know, when you talk about leadership skills and in a book and kind of how you translate those against kind of like life lessons and how you, not just how you approach what's on the court, but how you approach life. What is your leadership philosophy?
Well, what's cool is, you know, sports and athletics, competitive anything, I think teaches you certain lessons about yourself that you can take into the future as a human. So Dr. Zinger always promotes is you're an athlete for 4 years, but you're a citizen for life. So hopefully the life lessons that you learn in athletics will take you further. But when we look at leadership skills, you got to look at your core values. Who are you? And what makes you authentic? And what do you have? You know, true power comes from empowering others. So I think the ability for me to teach and teach these guys and women about certain things in life, then, you know, hopefully they'll never forget me and the lessons that they learn in the weight room or on the court when we're conditioning, resilience, things like that. Hopefully they'll take those into their skill set in life when they get a job.
Well, one of the things I think that as seen as a leader, you kind of from reading all these things from all the different athletes, as they, I think they see you as a leader, and you kind of take on these strong roles, obviously, in the weight room, you know, telling them what to do and making them work their asses off, kind of, so to speak. But then you also, I think that when you say authentic, they also really know how much you care, which is really one of the things that I found fascinating. What they always talk about how strong you are and stuff like that, but everybody here talks about and that, you know, how you challenge them, but then also how much they know that you're there for them, that you are there, you know, they know that you're on their team, even though you're pushing them and they're mad at you, and they want to, you're on their team.
I learned that probably from my parents. There were times when they were teachers, so, you know, they would sacrifice. They were servants, you know, they were servants, and servant leadership is giving unto others and empowering them. So I can't go wrong in my job if I don't put the athlete first. Now, does that sacrifice in other spots in my life? Absolutely. You know, as long as I put them first, I can't go wrong.
And that's one of the, I think one of the best, the stories here, everybody knows that the Sherron Collins story, when he came here, he was overweight. He was really overweight for him. I mean, you know, and that you, talking about sacrifice, I mean, you really dedicated, you were there, you ate all the meals with him and you shopped with him and you just wouldn't let him get, you know, you just made sure he did not get off the program until he was kind of, until he realized that the program was really what he wanted to do. You made him stick with the program.
That was a lot of hard work and dedication on both of our parts, I think, because I'm sure both of us got frustrated at some point along the way, but we persevered. And you know, I remember Sherron in 2008 was under 200 pounds when we won the national championship, and the sacrifices that he made to get to where he wanted to be and for the good of our team. But that guy was the last guy dribbling the ball at the end of the game. So that was pretty cool. And I'll never forget that. He won't. And we have a tight bond. I think I would do anything for Sherron and he would do anything for me at this point.
That's great. So I, one of the, my husband always says, you know, Mario made that shot, but the shot right before that was made by Sherron. It was a team effort. It was pretty awesome. Now, when you're working with these athletes and stuff like that, tell me, when somebody comes in and you're, and they give you an 18-year-old attitude, because, you know, or 17-year-old or 18-year-old attitude, how do you, do you just beat it out of them by making them work hard, or how do you?
I think my 41-year-old attitude is a little bit smarter. It depends on the athlete. You know, people have their certain strengths. We look at. I've defined certain strength in that. You know, you can either be physically strong, mentally strong, emotionally strong, intellectually strong, morally strong, or you can have this experience or skill as your strength. What I'll do is just tap into their weakness, you know,
and make
that apparently
push their
clear.
Push their buttons.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you are basically an expert at pushing buttons.
Yeah, I think my friends and family would say that.
One of the stories here, you know, you pushed a few buttons, and sometimes, you know, when you throw down a gauntlet, you have to, what happens when you throw down the challenged people?
Well, intellectual strength isn't my forte. I usually end up hurt in the hospital, you know. Sometimes I do make a challenge that my body can't deliver.
Well, as you get older, right, you become the wiser.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, so this next year, as we're coming into the team, as you're, you know, you worked with a lot of these guys this summer, and how much, you know, when you're working with them, I mean, when they first come in, what is your summer program? I'm kind of wrapped up. How do you an evaluation of them in the summer when they first come in?
Well, our evaluation would be, it's a simple assessment. It's a vertical jump on the force plate. So we'll assess guys and look at what they need to work on, and it's very apparent what they need to work on. I think the use of our technology over the last year has made me a way better strength coach, a way better teacher, a way better programmer, motivator, I feel like we've separated ourselves from a lot of other sport performance places in the country with the use of the technology that we have. And we're just going to get better because I have bigger mm-hmm. visions for that, too.
That's great.
So we assess them on the force plate, and it becomes very clear what they need to work on.
Do they see it, too? Or does
yeah.
it, do
you, we explain it to them, and then they get it. And, you know, the use of our video or mm-hmm. Uber Sense on our iPads uh-huh. is huge, but we have video on every rack. Mm-hmm. And the force plate, those numbers don't lie. It's the most precise piece of equipment out there. So
that's cool, because that's what I was wondering, because a lot of these kids are coming in at such, you know, high levels already. I mean, they have so much talent as the high recruits. I mean, Wiggins, I mean, you've got some incredible talent coming yeah. in. And, you know, and they've always been told how great they are. Now they're coming in and say, well, now you need to work on this.
Well,
or do they have
you know, you look at it, and the biggest gains that somebody is going to make as an athlete become painfully obvious to them when they walk on campus as a freshman. Mm-hmm. Because you look at everybody else in this volume of training mm-hmm. from even just a sophomore, the volume that Perry Ellis has had over the last year mm-hmm. squashes anything that Andrew Wiggins probably has ever done in terms of training mm-hmm. and repping things. So that experience, that 9 other months or 12 other months that mm-hmm. Perry has had, you can't even compare. So just imagine that 5 years that Travis Relaford had.
Yeah.
Or who's our senior this year? You know, you got Tarik Black.
Right.
Justin Wesley. Inexperience. Shows. Mm-hmm. But these guys want to get good.
Right.
They want to get really good. They mm-hmm. want to be the best that they can be. And they're competitive. And then they realize that they have to get good. Mm-hmm. So then they realize they have to do the volume of work. That's, or they're going to yeah. be left behind.
Right. They really, they the ones that are going to make it realize that this is, they're going to the next level. And the only way to do it is to work.
Absolutely. And everybody's uh-huh. there to mm-hmm. support them mm-hmm. and make them better and for us to win.
Yeah. Well, we like it when you win.
Yeah, everybody does.
Well, this has been great. So I think that the book is a great idea. I would love to, as you're working on that and working with the team this year, we're all pretty excited about your new team here. I think KU, we were so excited. I mean, last year's team was so much fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've had, you know, I love KU basketball. I mean, I grew up as a Jayhawk, so.
Yeah.
So one thing is watching basketball, but what's really so amazing is watch how these kids mature, like you see mm-hmm. how Perry and watching these kids really come in as kids and just out of high school and looking up and how they, you know, and when you get like somebody like Travis Relaford, just mm-hmm. how,
yeah,
it's what a man he is.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
a really
awesome
good man.
To see how far the community, the coaches, the support, reaches into these guys' futures because they're never going to forget where they came from, and that's cool. And they're taught how to be a man here.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. And I think them having you there in their lives, being teaching them how to be not just strong physically, but helping them be strong emotionally, is pretty amazing. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next week we are going to have, hopefully, Paul Warner from Warner Architects on our show. But thank you so much, Andrew, for being here. This has been great. People can get us on the lawrencebusinessmagazine.com online or like us on Facebook for updates. And you also can follow Andrea on Twitter at @A_Hootie, right?
Yeah.
She tweets a lot, so you should follow her on Hootie. She's a lot of fun to follow on Twitter. So thank you so much for being here. The Lawrence Business Magazine, every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. here on KLWN 1320, redefining the concept of business.